You're listening to the Managing Partners Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Daisy. We interview top lawyers about how they're growing their firm. All right. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Managing Partners Podcast. I'm Kevin Daisy, and I'm your host. Today, I have a cool guest that is bringing some interesting topics to the table. And Hamed's with us here today, and he runs a company called LegalSoft. You've probably heard of it. They do a lot of cool things. And I'm excited for him to share not only what he does and how he helps law firms, but some of the insights that he has and some of the things that he sees that is coming in the near future. So, Hamed, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Kevin. Thanks for having me today. Appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, for everyone out there listening in, if you would give us a quick introduction of yourself and your background, and we'll get more into some of the other topics here in a few minutes. But yeah, tell us about yourself.
My experience is mainly started with the tech. I went to engineering school, obviously many, many years ago in Northern California, graduated when I was 17, and I got recruited quickly into Silicon Valley in early 80s. So I spent 20 years in Silicon Valley. A lot of great companies that I had the pleasure of working with, things like Sun Microsystem, HP, Compaq, those companies. And I got my MBA there, and then about 20 years later, I got recruited to come to Los Angeles to be part of another great high-tech company and was there for a few years. And I was the president of US division, the Northern America division. And then later on, I sort of came into the area of law, and I found out there was a lot of things coming from a very high-end, high-tech industry. Coming to law was like, oh my God, where have they been? Because there's not much tech happening, or there's not much innovations, technologies, automations, everything that I sort of grew up with for 20 plus years. That gave us me opportunity to get into actually creating technologies and processes for the law, and also structuring law firms, which basically didn't have any structure. And that was the biggest part of the problem when I started doing sort of coaching and consulting and masterminding within the law firms. Was a lot had to do with the structure of the firm, which was not set up to a scale. And that's how the scaling thing came about. It's like, how do we scale law firms? Because in the tech or any other major industries, it's pretty clear how you scale up. You know, it's like sort of the blueprints are there. For illegal, there wasn't no blueprints to follow. So that's how my career started, by scaling law firm, and that became sort of the world where I also published a book. My first book was about how to scale your stupid law firm, because from a tech perspective, it was pretty stupid. It was like no tech. That's how it all started. And then we got into the LegalSoft. Scaling identified a whole bunch of opportunities and challenges. One of the main challenges was the tech, workflow automation, processes, having CRMs, having communication systems, and all of that. And the second biggest challenge was when I actually was able to scale a firm from handling like 500 cases to 3,000 cases. The first challenge that popped up, even everything was implemented, was the staffing. It was like, okay, Hamed, we got all these cases, we got all this stuff set up, but I don't have enough qualified, affordable, local staff to handle this. So what's the point of me getting all of these clients when I can't really staff them up? So that's brings up the second challenge. So LegalSoft started providing legal trained virtual staff globally and place them into these law firms for sort of a quarter of the cost, with no HR costs and no long-term commitments, no benefit costs and things like that. And that went really well. And we were able to say, okay, now we got the clients and we got the staff. So we went into the business model of having a one-stop shop where we can start a law firm, we can scale the law firm, you know, marketing-wise, client generations, automations, and technology, then staff it up, and then come back to the beginning and scale it again. So it was like going back to square one, scale up again, staff it up, come back again. And then we do that in a lot of different practice types: personal injury, labor, employment, immigration, family, all of those practice types. So that's in the totally sort of like what, I mean, I have a lot of legal expertise in-house, from attorneys to paralegals to case managers. And we've worked with 1,000+ law firms that we do these services for. So I hope that wasn't a long explanation, but there was a lot of stuff to cover.
Well, I know it is. You all provide such a lot, so many different services and solutions. But it's not like you started that way. You saw the need, you started at one area, and now you've added as you've gone. And I think that's a great way to go. And versus trying to do everything, you kind of saw problems and you came with solutions to those problems. And
right.
You've built the business you have. So very impressive and very cool how you're helping those. And I haven't ran into or know a lot of companies that kind of do the staffing piece and intake, so people to answer the phones, but you're staffing those assigned to that client versus like a call center, and they're trained on that client.
Yes, Kevin, that was a big issue because we're working all of this, especially in personal injury, employment, mass tort, and so forth. You're waiting for that great opportunity to make your mark and have those 7-8-figure cases and things like that. And mm-hmm. one of the things when I noticed, I said, these firms, when you're troubleshooting them and it's trying to scale them, he said, some random person, some random call center picks up that call like at the 11 p.m. on the Saturday. So how can you trust that person that is going to retain that client for you versus having a dedicated, trained, incentivized, bilingual staff that belongs to you for, I don't know, something like $2,000 a month, dedicated full-time to make sure you don't miss.
I like that.
Yeah, it's like incentivized. It's like, okay, great, John. You John basically getting paid $10 an hour as a visual staff and retain you a 7-figure case. They are incentivized to do that. So that solves that sort of a problem. Same thing with case managers. I came across firms who have 160 cases per case manager and no assistant. And I'm like, well, no wonder you're not settling at the maximum benefits and maximum settlements amounts because you haven't talked to your client for like 4 months and they stopped treatment 4 months ago. And you're still trying to figure out what's next. So we give them a case manager assistant who maintains all of those communications, updates, finalized treatments, collecting medical records in the case of PI again, or collecting employment records, all this other stuff with a simple case manager assistant who we train to be a personal injury case manager assistant. So we do all of the training for them. So some of the funny things also happen when you come to the firm that you're coming from analytic, again, tech industry background. I ask them, so what's your cost of client acquisition? And they're like, what? I don't know. Oh. I think it's $1,000 or something. I said, look, if you're in any kind of a business, I said, you bought this thing for $10 and you're selling it for $20. If you don't know how much you bought it for, how do you know you're even profitable? And you're like, well, that's a good point. How do we figure that out? So it's very easy. You take your ad spend, you get, how many leads you get, how many converts, what's your conversion rate. You take that, you divide it up, and you find out your cost of client acquisition yep. is $1,400 for such a practice. So the funny thing about that, when we did this in California, like 4 or 5 years ago, cost of client acquisition in the PI in California was running about $1,200, $1,200. And it's one of those states which is a minimum policy is the worst in the country. It's 15-30. Yeah. So it's nothing, right? So 1,100 cost of client acquisition is still cool. In the past 5 years, that's gone up to like 4,000. So your cost of goods essentially 4x, but the policy is still 15. I showed to a lot of big firms that it doesn't even worth it for the firm to handle those cases because I calculated the average settlement fees and the average number of months which they handled that case. For every case they signed up, they lost $3,400 per case. They lost $3,400.
Wow. That's important.
And they came to the fact that one of those firms says, oh, I'm going to start referring all of this out so I don't have the cost of operation. So now they're referring out something like 260 cases a month.
Wow.
Because they figure out if they do it in-house, they lose money. If they send it out, they have a chance of recovering some of the initial investment, right? So that's something they missed, cost of client acquisition. Then I said, for pre-litigation, what's the average time that you, from intake to settlements, on pre-lit, how long is that? I have no idea. Well, you need to have the idea, because that's the cost that you're paying every month to staff and overhead for that case. So we calculate that for them. And then we calculate the average fee settlements and the number of referrals from retention, client referrals, all of that stuff.
Do you have a referral system or a program, or is it just?
Yeah, absolutely. We set up a referral program, not only referral to other firms, referral from other firms, and referrals from previous clients. The issue with the legal industry was that they're always looking for the next new client, and they seem to take it for granted or forget that I've been practicing for 15 years. I provided services to thousands of clients, and I am assuming every single one of them are going to come back to me and send their friends and family. But that's wrong. They get hijacked on the way to you because of all the social media ads, the billboards, the radios, the TV, everything. So they don't even going to remember your name after a few years. So what's the client retention program? Be in their face. Be in communication with them. Let them know what's going on with you and your firm. And when I say that, they sort of like stand up all of a sudden. It's like, oh my God, I have all of this goodwill and assets that I developed over 15 years. And I just basically park it over there and hoping that it's going to show up somewhere somehow. It doesn't. On the other side, when we get all of these emails from the big companies, like I use LegalZoom for a few of my sort of corporate formations and stuff like that. Boy, those guys don't leave me alone. After like 7-8 years, I get so many, communication from them, and they probably 5x'd their revenue from me because of it. Because every time they say, your register agent this, your insurance that, I go in there and I spend money, right? So they can assume since they set up my company, I'm just going to go back to them every single time for everything.
Yeah, that's great. And those insights that you're mentioning, and as an owner, having that information, cost per acquisition, all those numbers and stuff. I mean, most of the time I talk to lawyers that maybe want to work with us for marketing, and they don't even have a handle on what the revenue is currently or what it was last year. They might have to go look it up, So obviously this show, we talk about running law firms and business, and all law firms as they start typically are by lawyers that want to be lawyers and don't know how to run a business. So a lot of these problems, right out the gate, they don't have a lot of these things established. It's interesting what you guys are doing. You're kind of covering like everything. Say, hey, we can help you with all of these different situations, staff this, staff that, put this process in place. So it's pretty interesting that you've kind of come full circle to be able to help, a firm with these different things. But
yeah, absolutely.
They all need it.
They all need it. In several law firms, when I went in there and actually calculated 2 years worth of net earnings and net income, which is in our industries is like earning before taxes. And everybody thought they're making like 40 to 50% profit on every case they get. On all of these firms that I evaluated, all the way to the penny, their net profit was less than 22%. And they were like, oh my God, so where is all the money going? Well, here is where all the money is going. And then I said, okay, so if you refer this case out and get 40% referral fee, you basically double your net income on the same case that you got. So you can get more money having them do the work than you doing all the work. So we proved that point almost on a daily basis to the firms, where you don't need to take and work on every single case internally if you're not set up for it. The other thing is, I have two kids in law school, and I had a lot of family who came through law schools, and they don't teach them any of this stuff. They teach them just the law, and even on that is on the federal level, not even a state level. So, right? So imagine I came out as an engineer going to working for a big tech, and I'm an engineer, trained engineer, work engineer, that's all I want to do. And they ask me to do accounting and marketing and automation and client generation, client support, I will destroy the company because I don't know any of those. I didn't study it. I didn't get trained. So they said, just give me an engineering job. I go do all the engineering, get all the other experts to do the rest of the company, right? And that's how those companies become successful. They hire CFOs and CTOs and marketing directors and CMOs and all of that stuff. With law, it's not like that. They just throw the lawyer in there and say, you be it all, but just make sure you're doing a great job. Well, it doesn't work. The person, the poor lawyer, was not trained in any of it.
Yeah, they just wanted to be a good lawyer.
Yeah, exactly. They went to school to practice law. Now they're in the business of law where they don't know much about it other than what everybody else told them. So they end up following each other to the end of the earth, basically. It says, oh, my cousin John does this for his marketing, so I do the same thing. My friend Mike does his accounting this way, so I'm going to do that. So the whole just sort of like blind leading the blind. In those aspects that is not law, is operations, business, finance, marketing. So we try to make it a one-stop shop. So when people are coming in, they actually get the full spectrum of how to operate and scale a law firm so they can do their lawyering.
I love it. And again, that's what this podcast is all about, is talking about these different problems and topics, culture, intake, sales, marketing, basically a lot of what you cover as a partner for a firm. So impressive kind of what you've done and the problems you've seen out there. And you know, there's a lot of great attorneys that have figured it out, that run their firm like a business, that got it or get it. But at some point, they had to figure that out and make that conscious decision.
Right, exactly.
Hey, I have to do this differently. Hopefully, they had a mentor maybe that told them, hey, you're doing it wrong. You need to do this.
Right.
But they still have to make all the decisions themselves. They still have to work on each piece at a time. Just like I do here, like we're constantly working on this piece and that piece, and some pieces we don't even know we have to work on yet because we're just not there yet.
Exactly. So there was firms who were usually resistant on implementing technology. We get them over that resistance. Hiring virtual staff is a big breakthrough, and they all used to have all of my staff right around me in the same office, in the same whatever. And now I have law firms who have 100+ virtual staff from LegalSoft that goes from intake to legal assistants, case managers, paralegals, demand writers, even remote attorneys who help with litigation, that are attorneys globally in different countries. Their writing and skill, communication skill is great. They cost less than $3,000-$4,000 a month, and they can do all the motions. They can do all the complaints without filing them. Obviously, they're not licensed. They can do demands. They can do drafts, everything. And it's worked out very well in that segment of being able to staff and scale and have no long-term employment commitment. Now that we're talking about all of this whole thing now, all of a sudden, the AI got thrown in. Not that it wasn't complicated enough and sort of challenging enough. Then in the past 2 years, the AI just fell off the sky and basically says, now what are you going to do with the AI and the law? And now we've got all of this noise coming around the AI. And actually about a year ago, I was so sort of like excited about it because I come from tech and the law and then the AI, and it's like a perfect marriage for me. It's like the marrying the tech and the legal together. And I can actually do something with it. So I actually published a book, it's How to Scale Your AI Law Firm. And it describes the impact, at least, well, it was done a year ago, which with the speed the AI is going, is probably be obsolete in a year. It's not one of those books that is going to be like a 20 years shelf value, which I'm going to be updating it hopefully soon. But
now you have to date it every year, 2024, 2025.
Exactly. You have to date it annually.
I would love for you to share kind of your thoughts and insight on or predictions or what you see coming. So for everyone out there listening, you have a firm, a lot of things we just mentioned and talked about, you might be going, oh, I need help with all these things. So there's a lot to it, and I'm sure Hime can, if you connect with him, he can talk you through and help you with a lot of things. But he did want to share today too his thought on AI, and obviously he's done some research and he's wrote a book. So we wanted to kind of talk about how that can impact your firm. It's going to, for sure.
Absolutely. If you're a transactional attorney, which is basically means immigration, bankruptcy, estate planning, some family, you know, uncontested divorces and so forth, or corporate formations, AI is going to impact it dramatically because it has to do by collecting information, not to undermine the value of the attorney on any of these things, but a big chunk of the work has to do with collecting information, analyzing it, populating a lot of forms, preset forms like Chapter 7, Chapter 11, or immigration forms and so forth, and then checking for accuracy and then submitting it to immigration office and all of that. All of that AI is going to just do it. I mean, you won't even know that it's happening. It's just going to pass by. Client comes in, all of this happens, gets submitted, goes in the waiting list until you get an update and all of that. So be very careful about how you're moving forward and making sure that AI is integrated into your business model fully. On the litigation side, which is personal injury, workers' comp, employment, and those things, there is a whole chunk of areas that we are developing. Even LegalSoft is developing AI. We have a pretty good-sized team of AI developers because we want to be in the front of it. Doing the AI, everything from intake, your intake, for big part, going to be a very customized AI that your potential clients won't even know that it's not a real person because it looks like it, a real person, it talks like it, it acts like it, and it's like, it's kind of creepy almost that you're talking to somebody that doesn't exist. So you're going to do the intake. They know how to escalate it if the case is, you know,
that's crazy.
Big value case. They know that, okay, let me get my attorney on the phone, which you always want your staff to do when there's a great potential. The AI is going to be programmed to even know it before you know it, right? So intake AI. And then you have a case management AI that is happening with setting up treatments, setting up appointments, following up with appointments, collecting documents, sorting, analyzing, summarizing documents. Like we have technology in LegalSoft where you can put in 50 different type of medical records from examinations to MRIs to x-rays and everything. And in less than 5 minutes, it gives you an entire summary of all medical records that a paralegal would have to spend a week on. You get it in less than 5 minutes, you know.
That's crazy.
And then you go into the demand writing. We right now can produce thousands of demand today through our system and just personal injury demands, workers' comp demands, completely written out, customized, was trained on thousands of demands already written by hundreds of attorneys. So the system is trained to do that. So just imagine what is that going to do to your practice. We're talking about client acquisitions. We're talking about intake, case management and follow-ups, document collections, demand or draft writings, and going all the way to be able to actually prep the complaint before the attorney has to review and sign and submit. This whole thing is going to be AI impacted. And if you're just waiting, sitting around waiting to see what's going to happen, and what the regulation is going to do to it, and what is everybody else do, you're going to leave money on the table. You at the very least need to train yourself and educate yourself about what is about to happen. Just like you keep yourself up with all the changes in the state law that you're practicing, you now need to add AI to that. You know, it's like a CLE credits that they give you for to be able to actually keep your license. It's almost like the AI credit you need to get on the site, maybe it's like should be 3 or 4 times your CLE credit amount to be able to keep up with the technology and the AI.
No, yeah, it's been to a few legal events and AI is usually a topic, obviously. Mm-hmm. You know, I was listening to some attorneys give some presentations, some attorneys that are already embracing and implementing this, and they're giving talks to at a bar events and stuff like that on, you know, how other firms can implement it. But, you know, there's like using like AI outside of the firm versus if you have like the more enterprise type licenses where you can use the AI locked down within your own database, if you will. Right. So So the, some of the firms we're talking about a little bit more like you could take all the documents and the way you do things and your history of your files and things, and it can be secured behind basically a firewall. It's your own AI that you can produce your own documents and but still be within, you know, how you do things and stuff like that. So I thought that was interesting because I think most people are worried that, oh, well, you know, I'm going to use ChatGPT to write a document for me, and it's pulling from all these other sources. If you, you know, take it the next step, you can actually build out your own internal kind of library and AI that learns, and you can grow it that way. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
I was in the era of when internet came about or not, if you believe it or not. We were one of the frontiers where we said there is the internet, and people were like, okay, what the heck is this? And then the dot-com era, right? I was involved in some of the first dot-coms that came about from Netscape, dot-com and so forth. And then the e-commerce hit. And a lot of people around were saying that, do you think I would ever try to even buy my shoe online? What the heck are you talking about? I'm never going to happen. I got to go to the store, try it 4 times, go to 3 other stores and try it. And now if you're telling them that you need to go to a store to buy your shoe, you say, do you think I'm crazy? Why would I waste my time like that? I'm just going to go do 3 clicks and get 3 shoes tomorrow. So it's the same thing with AI.
I'm wearing some shoes right now. If I can get my leg up this high. I bought them online. Never touched them.
Everything I'm wearing, I bought it online. You know, it's like from head to toe, everything is bought online because I can see myself going store to store and trying things or pick the clothes up and go to the register. I mean, are you kidding? I have to basically pause half of my work to be able to do those things. So it's the same thing with the AI. Right now it's selective. Would I buy my shoe kind of on the dot-com or not? It's the same thing with the AI. People are questioning it. Some people are impressed. Some people are very, you know, negative about it or not on board or haven't seen the value. But I'm telling you, 3 years from now, 2 years from now, we're like, how did we used to do it other than the AI? It's like, what are we going to do without it? Not like, how are we going to do with it now? So there's going to be a huge impact.
You'll be left behind.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to be left behind. I speak to at least 10, 15 different conferences a year. Now, 80% of my speaking engagement is all AI and the legal industry. And not about the trend and stuff, but the practical use of it today. And maybe 12 months from now. That's all I can predict is maximum of 12 months.
I like the talks on like, hey, here's what you can do now to implement this versus just the theory and what might happen and all that stuff, because that's not very useful.
Right. The actual practical, not the noise. There's a lot of AIs in there who are pretend to be AI or they're just tied directly to ChatGPT and they just give you a front end to be able to interact with ChatGPT or something like that. So you have to be able to clean it up. But nevertheless, you got to get involved first and then build more expertise so you can clean it up after you're exposed to what they expose you to. So that's basically my AI thing for now. So we go anywhere from global virtual staffing, which is the most traditional, you know, thing, all the way to AI to replace even the virtual staff that we're putting in place. We have plans to replace them ourselves with the AI.
That's awesome. That's amazing. So definitely a lot to unpack there, of course. It's funny, I was just out in my main office here and a few of us were just chatting earlier and we were talking about AI and how it impacts our business. You know, we do marketing and SEO and content and advertising for law firms, you know, we're just talking about the different ways that it came back to us and opportunities though, opportunities for us, how we can embrace it, how we can use it and things like that and what changes we might see over time. But, and then we got talking about just, you know, other things AI will do. And we're talking about like, you know, I go on Zillow all the time. I own some real estate, but always looking regardless if I'm buying. And we were just like, well, one day you're going to click on Zillow and be like, hey, I want to buy this. There doesn't need to be all these people to go meet with or do all this paperwork. My last place I bought was an investment property. I bought it sight unseen. my agent went there and made a video and sent it to me and I bought it, right? But all this stuff's going to be automated, you know, to just, you know, having title companies and all these other places that you have to go through, like it's going to be automated for sure. And you're going to be able to purchase things much quicker and a lot of people won't be needed. So,
right. Absolutely.
Yeah. You'll never be able to buy a house online and click a button. You sure will at some point. So if you just think about that, or like your example of, I'll never buy my shoes or a shirt online. That's crazy. We do it all day now. So
yeah, no, absolutely. I had I had experience a few months ago when I was updating my estate plan, and I didn't pay that much attention on it before. But when I went through the process, and I have a great estate planning attorney, and all I noticed that he's basically asking me a lot of questions, getting a lot of information. And then based on his experience, which is limited, he's been practicing for like 6-7 years, he makes me a recommendation. So I said, my AI, not only going to do all of that, but it has access to hundreds of thousands of estate planning that is be a best match to my situation. Mm-hmm. And now this system is going to tell me how my estate plan is going to be written out versus somebody with 7 years of experience, maybe 700 clients experience versus 70,000 client experience. So boom, click here.
Interesting.
Provide information. Click here. Get 5 different recommendations. Your estate planning is in your mailbox. You know, done.
Yeah. So those types of you know, lawyers and their staff got to be, you know, keep your eye on this stuff, but you know, implement it, learn it, understand it. You know, or you will be left behind, and there will be a lot of challenges ahead. I think it'll be some time before, you know, this is like replacing law lawyers completely and stuff like that. I'm sure there'll be some regulation and things.
I don't even think, Kevin, that needs to replace attorneys. The attorneys just have to bring themselves up to be using these tools so they can expedite and scale their law practice. So instead of being able to handle 10 clients a month, they can handle 80 clients a month and not have as many staff and as many processes. I'm not saying that this will replace attorneys. I'm saying some attorneys going to learn this, implement it, rise up, and eat everybody else's lunch. That's what I'm saying. That's what's going to happen. It's not going to say, okay, we don't need any more lawyers in this country. That's not the thing. No. It's like, are we going to have the highest level? I mean, we're going to have like more Elon Musk's in the industry. It's not saying we're outdoing Elon Musk. We just need a lot more of them, right? So because he's innovative, he's fast, he makes decisions quickly, you know, he uses resources properly. And that's what made him successful. We don't say we can do away with Elon Musk's of the world or Steve Jobs of the world. We're just saying that we're going to a lot more people using today's technologies and AIs to come. They're going to rise up to that level.
Yeah, that's a good point. Another talk I was listening to on AI, just some pieces I took away from it. There was a law firm. I think they're more like a business firm, you know, the corporate work and stuff like that. And they had already taken something that took 25 hours of staff time down to 5 hours. And they said within a month, they should have it down to 2 hours.
Right.
And so their big thing was switching from the billable hour, which every law firm in that kind of case does. So that'll no longer be very viable for them, because if it takes them 2 hours, then they're used to 25 hours. And what do they do? So they didn't even know the answer to this, but they were trying to figure out, how do we switch to a value? How valuable is that to them versus how many hours they put in?
Right.
And so coming up with a whole new billing model to account for AI, because they can do a lot more work faster, but pricing it on the value of the result versus how many hours they build. So that was an interesting topic.
Fixed cost model. A lot of the stuff going to be fixed cost model, unless on heavy duty litigation. Everything else going to be fixed cost model. Like, you own some of this and some of that, that's going to be costing $5,000 here, $7,500 there. It's going to be a lot of cost models. And there's going to be a huge shift on that. And I didn't even talk about the commercial companies like Amazon's and Google's who are going to get into the legal market by other programs like ABS programs that are coming up. So basically, you could have an Amazon law going on in about a year or two, which is going to compete with every other attorney on the planet here.
Wow.
So there's a lot of, maybe for future topics, there's a whole segment that I wrote about how the big boys are getting into law and just treating it like shoe manufacturer. You know, to them, it's just another line of business.
I mean, they've done it with a lot of other industries, and I admit that makes sense.
Yeah, between telemedicine and the ABS program within the law, they could be doing a lot more stuff that the traditional doctors or lawyers are doing now. So that's a teaser for the next session.
The next episode with Ahmed. Well, I appreciate you sharing so much that you have already, and kind of hopefully everyone listening's ears are perked up and they're thinking about a lot of things. So I think it's an interesting topic, and we could definitely talk about it more. Anyone listening, reach out if you want to connect. What's your latest book that you would recommend that you just put out?
I think the first one that I always need to read is How to Scale Your Stupid Law Firm one that is on Amazon and so forth. We'd be happy if they contact us. We'll send them a free copy and they can download it in any way you want. But then reading that to understand the concept of the rightly structured law practice. And then the second thing is the AI book, which is walks them into what's coming next and what's already here. I think those are the two recommendations of the books to follow.
Well, Ahmed, anything else you want to share before we wrap up?
No, I wanted to thank you for having me on this episode, and looking forward to other episodes that we can explore other topics that are hot and exciting in this industry, and build a partnership around that.
I love that. I almost feel like we could have an AI update, and it's going to move fast, and there's going to be lots of more AI topics to cover, I'm sure. So
yes, absolutely.
And as things are coming, new things to implement, new things to take advantage of. If you think about it that way, get on board, take advantage, start learning this stuff. If you've never used ChatGPT or any of these programs, just start, learn it and start messing around and see what they're capable of.
Yes.
And I know we're doing it in our business. We can hide from it or we can embrace it. So,
absolutely.
Well, Ahmed, thank you so much. I appreciate you sharing today.
Thank you, Kevin.
Everyone, thank you for listening to this show, and always looking for great guests, as always. If you think you would be a great guest, if you run a law firm, or if you're an expert like Ahmed or myself in a different niche of helping law firms, I'd love to have you on. So please reach out and have a great day. We'll see you soon. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Managing Partners Podcast. If you could just please leave a review on one of our podcast platforms, we would greatly appreciate it. For any marketing help with your law firm, please consider Array Digital at arraydigital.com.